You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. The first March for Science drew hundreds of thousands of scientists and science enthusiasts to events around the world. It was spring of 2017, and there was a sense that science was under attack from the new Trump administration. Organizers said they were building a movement that was bigger than party politics and that there would be many more marches to come. But last year, attendance was down, and this year, there wasn't even a march in D.C., and only a couple thousand people showed up for the newly designated flagship event in New York City. Which raises the question of whether the March for Science is done. And if so, what happened? Rebecca Fuoco was a March for Science organizer in Los Angeles. She recently wrote in Undark magazine that the march may have fizzled, but it didn't fail. She joins me now to share her thoughts on the legacy of March for Science. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Rebecca, if we are talking about the legacy of the March for Science, does that mean that in your mind it is pretty much a thing of the past?
I don't think so. I think that as proud as we all were of that first march and the attendance that we drew, I think that the most important accomplishment of the March for Science was the dialogue that it sparked around the role of scientists and policy and the resulting cultural shift that put into motion. So as soon as someone floated the idea of scientists marching on Washington, the scientific community started energetically debating whether or not scientists can also be advocates. And that is by no means a new debate, but it was happening on a wider scale and with a new urgency. From January to April of 2017, that conversation was happening on the op-ed pages, in academic journals, at conferences, on social media, as scientists were deciding whether or not to participate in the march. I think a lot of minds were changed. I think people came away from it understanding that scientists can be political without being partisan, and that it's a good thing for scientists to care about how science gets used. Ultimately, major scientific organizations endorsed the march and thousands of scientists participated. And after the march, the question became less about whether scientists should advocate, but how.
That conversation that you're talking about happening between January and April about the role of scientists more broadly in the public discourse and the political process, as you said, it's not a new conversation. It also doesn't seem like one that, you know, would have disappeared the day after the March for Science. So what in your mind happened between March for Science 2017, hundreds of thousands of scientists, and 2018, tens of thousands, 2019, it kind of happened without any fanfare?
Right. So the 2018 March attendance took a pretty big dip. I mean, we're talking about 100,000 people in D.C. for the first march, and then that dropped to 10,000 in D.C. for the second march. A lot of people chalked it up to march fatigue, meaning that the second march was preceded by the Women's March and then the March for Our Lives for gun control a few weeks before. And I think that did play a role. But I also don't think that the momentum around science activism died. I think it lives on in other forms. From talking to other satellite organizers, as well as some of the march's partner organizations, it's clear that a lot of the volunteers and participants got their feet wet with the first march, but then they kept on fighting for science through other activities. So the Union of Concerned Scientists, a group that's been doing science advocacy since 1969, saw a huge wave of new interest and activism among its members and other scientists in the wake of Trump's election and the march. It was so big that they created entirely new programs to meet the demand. There were environmental science students that marched in the first march that are now involved with the Sunrise Movement calling for a Green New Deal. There were public health scientists who marched who are writing op-eds about the measles outbreak. There were scientists that marched who now go on Capitol Hill trips with their scientific society to lobby for funding. And then one of my favorite examples is Jasmine Clark. She is a microbiologist whose first taste of politics was directing the Atlanta March for Science. She then decided to run for the Georgia House of Representatives, and she won. And then there's some March for Science satellites that have turned their attention to local issues and have been able to mobilize their community outside of marches, like the Idaho and New Mexico satellite groups that successfully fought state proposals to eliminate references to human-caused climate change from public school curriculum. So there is a movement, but it's decentralized geographically and topically. A lot of folks want to get involved with policy issues related to their own discipline or their own community, and that's okay.
Rebecca Fuoco, in your piece for UnDark magazine, you write that, quote, crowd sizes aren't really the right measuring stick for long-term success of the March for Science. The sorts of things that you're mentioning there are kind of anecdotal. They're much harder to measure on a broad scale than how many people show up in a certain place on a certain day. But it sounds like you think those are perhaps better metrics for success.
Absolutely. They are anecdotal, but I've had conversations with a lot of people trying to kind of go over what happened, because I was disappointed in the second March turnout. And I don't know that there will be a March for Science next year, and I don't know that there should be. I think the March for Science was a rallying point, and as a result, there's a whole crop of science advocates who are working to bridge the gap between science and policy in all sorts of ways. That is hard to measure. I would love for somebody to do a study and really start counting how many people were truly activated by the march. And I'm surprised that that hasn't happened, being that this was a march organized by scientists. But, I mean, marching is a great step one, but then there's writing op-eds and letters to the editor, participating in government science advisory panels, submitting public comments on agency proposals, contacting government officials. There's just activism just has so many different shapes and forms.
Well, Rebecca Fuoco, you were an organizer of the March for Science in Los Angeles, so obviously already had, you know, we're already headed in this direction, perhaps. You are now a climate change communication specialist with an environmental group. Did your experience with the March for Science catalyze any changes or influence the direction that your career has taken?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm a science communications professional. Before the March for Science, I had been working with health and environmental researchers for years, pushing them to engage with the press and policymakers. And it was usually like pulling teeth. So when I saw that scientists, by their own volition, were organizing a march, I had to get involved. And it was really invigorating. And I think now I'm working on climate change specifically, because I think that is an area of science that is particularly under attack by the Trump administration. And since the first march, there's been a purge of scientists and experts from government positions and committees, especially as it relates to the environment. The EPA is working to twist and distort its math to shrink estimates of how many lives are saved by clean air protections, while Trump promotes his bogus idea that windmills cause cancer. So I've been inspired to work more directly on those issues and call out the Trump administration by name, even if that's political.
There have also been a lot of changes just in the organizational structure of the March for Science. It started off as very much a grassroots volunteer effort in 2017. By the time the 2018 March rolled around, there were several paid staffers at the national level and a fair bit of kind of controversy about that, some confusion or controversy about the goals of the March for Science. And now we're back to an all-volunteer organization. Do you see that as a sign that the March for Science is falling apart, or do you see that as a return to roots and rejuvenation, perhaps, of the original intent?
I think it's a return to roots. As one of the satellite organizers, I had no idea what that paid staff of 9 people was doing several months after the first march. That was kind of disappointing, and I wasn't the only satellite organizer who felt that way. I think the success of the march wasn't just that DC march. It was cities all around the country and all around the world that pulled off something amazing and created whole new networks around science activism. There were 50,000 people that marched in LA. There were 70,000 people that marched in Boston. So it was kind of disappointing to see the organization trying to start a top-down movement centralized in D.C. And kind of trying to do an overstuffed portfolio of changing programming that people weren't even really sure what the goals were and if they were trying to reinvent the wheel versus trying to amplify the organizations and people who have been doing activism since long before Trump was elected. So I see this as a return and a recognition that the strength of the science activism movement is in the grassroots.
Rebecca Fuoco, you've said that you're not sure that there will be a March for Science next year or that there should be a March for Science next year. And yet you are obviously passionate about the idea that scientists and science should be an active part of public policy and the public discourse. What would you like to see going forward from the March for Science organization, or perhaps not from that organization, but to sustain and build this conversation about the role of science and scientists in the public sphere?
In terms of a future for the brand and the networks that came out of the March for Science, I think those are best leveraged towards supporting the people and organizations doing deeper forms of activism. I think serving as a bridge between scientists who might be new, saying, hey, I want to get involved in activism, and connecting those people with other organizations and networks that can introduce people to those works, trainings and other opportunities for people to get involved. I don't think it's new programming, and I don't think it's more marches. I think it's connecting people.
Rebecca Fuoco is a climate change communication specialist, and she was an organizer of the March for Science in Los Angeles. She recently wrote about the legacy and the future of the March for Science for UnDark magazine. Rebecca, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks so much.